Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Any Given Game Day with Mike Carson. I am joined once again by the two men that make it all happen, Iron Mike. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. I'm sitting here tired from the sweat of good work and honest work, and now I get to do the
Ooh, and John, are you working honestly? Look me in the eye and tell
Somewhat,
me.
I suppose. Yeah, somewhat. We're recording today at lunchtime as opposed to our usual evening slot. So I'm actually technically working at the moment, so it's quite nice. Although it's lunchtime, so it's my lunch break. It's my lunch break.
Yeah, everyone's got to take a lunch break. A couple of bits. We'll get to Charlie Smith in a second. Mike, now our best bets, we'll get to that as well because some of them weren't great. But sharp action, a huge weekend in terms of Vegas and sportsbook up and down the country getting hit. Most popular bets, LA Rams -5 clicked, LA Detroit over 52.5 clicked, Bills on the money clicked, Jaguars -13, Vikings +6, Chargers +5. Cincy, Baltimore under 52.5, Bears -7, all won.
Well,
So,
that is a result. Although I noticed the Bills Patriots was 35-31. It's a little misleading because they were in charge in the second half. But that's 66, and I thought the 49-5, I probably would have gone under, but I had better under bets to take. This week it could be even worse because you've got 9 home dogs in the 16 games.
Ooh, that's interesting.
That is the other interesting one. And I know we mentioned this before is this 425 thing. So someone got in touch with me, and they sent me an email that said the reason there was no 405, so let's call it over here 905 game, is that 925 is what the 925 was what the major networks ask for the time to be. And so if Fox or any of those channels are showing something, CBS, etc., they want the game to be at 9:25 or 4:25 in the States in case the other game that they're showing runs over. So
That
the
makes sense.
4:05 game is usually the game that's being shown in the local affiliated market and has or NFL networks
Right.
has been up, and
Yeah,
all
because
of the
what they
late
do
sort of
when,
games for them.
yeah, the network broadcasts basically divide the country in especially in the early window, obviously. So whatever the network feed is in Cleveland, you'll be seeing Buffalo Cleveland this week, in the 1 o'clock in the 1 o'clock game, whereas somebody a few hundred miles away in Tennessee will be seeing Kansas City, Tennessee, if it's the same network. When that's you know that's and so they carve it up even on the late games too, although Fox shows America's game of the week, even
Which
though
should
America
always be the
hasn't
Dallas
voted.
Cowboys, but there we
Yeah,
go. Such is
America
life.
hasn't voted to give them the choice.
But it did make things interesting because I think it gave a chime for the kind of early games to be digested and kind of reacted
Yeah.
to before you just jumped in to the next set. I don't know if you
Yeah,
noticed, but
kind of the way a bird digests its food to feed it to its young.
the Raiders Eagles game
Just
went
imagining Scott
final
Hansen
at
doing that now for some reason. That's
oh
the image in
God.
my brain.
Raiders Eagles game kicked off at 1 o'clock Eastern and concluded at 3:35, which surely has to make it one of the shortest NFL games
They were
ever.
trying. They were all trying to go home too.
Pretty sure the Raiders did. They didn't score,
The
right?
referees kept their flags in their pockets.
Everyone's just like, I'm flat out not enjoying this experience. Let's go
Did you guys have a reservation or what?
home.
Hey, Jalen, let's hurry this up. Yeah.
Yeah, let the immersion on.
The Raiders continue to be a team of just they've got to be the worst right now.
I
John
think they're the
Goff.
worst team in the NFL. It's a tough competition.
It
I mean,
can be
there's a
tough, but
lot
there
of
has to be the
a lot of
team that buries the
contenders there,
horse. There
but
are.
they really seem the least well organized team, you know, with the least eye to the future as well.
Yeah, let's do, I mean, maybe just harper on that point for just a second. I mean, I don't think anybody expected the Raiders to be pulling up trees this year, but you would have thought with you know, a high draft pick, and also obviously Pete Carroll, one of the most experienced coaches in the NFL, coming in to coach the team. And after prior underperformance, you would have thought there would be at least some green shoots there, but it doesn't really seem like anything productive is happening. What do you think, Mike? What's gone wrong?
I don't know. The agricultural metaphor has kind of
There's a couple in there.
Yeah, but I mean, think they're good.
It's fair to say though that we would have expected them to be slightly better than they are, though, right?
Yeah. You would assume that Pete had a plan, and that the drafting of Jonte was an indication that that plan would be to keep the team like a Seattle team, mm-hmm. you know, which was control the game on the ground, the occasional deep shots, and win defensively. But they really, I mean, Chip Kelly to the side, who does definitely deserve to be fired. You know, they didn't seem to build a team around that. Now, you can argue they had a little bit of injury, bad luck on the offensive line, but even so, you know, what was the rest of the plan? And it seems like Pete was waiting maybe for next year. And I think Mark Davis's plan might be to hire Curly Lambeau as the coach, and then hire some scientist from Germany to bring him back to life. But after he's hired.
It's a work in progress.
It's a disastrous work in progress. If I asked you all, what do Micah Parsons, Patrick Mahomes, Nick Bosa, Malik Neighbors, Tyreek Hill, Tucker
Micah
Kraft,
Parsons, who's she?
Marshawn Lattimore all have in common? What do they all have in common?
The lack of an ACL or a functioning ACL?
A torn ACL. Najee Harris and Daniel Jones, torn Achilles. At what point do we actually start to say that this is a bit of a problem? I mean, there's a lot of injuries, but there are 30 and counting torn ACLs in the NFL this season.
Yeah, and there's only one Philip Rivers. So it's like, you know, they're not going to
be. You got to run to tear your ACL.
Everybody's not going to be able to go out and find a 45-year-old replacement for their injured players.
Now, there's plenty of those Rivers men running around somewhere. So surely one of them will play.
Yeah, this isn't the, you know, it isn't the film, the entertainment industry, unfortunately. Oh, well, it is. But, you know, unfortunately, it's not like BBC can hire Claudia Winkleman's 9-year-old daughter to do Claudia Winkleman's job just because her name's Winkleman. And, you know, oh, isn't
maybe
she great?
They could.
I love Strictly. Yeah. just veering off into other avenues there. But yeah, I mean, Dominic Cromartie, some of his kids might be old enough to play.
Right. Okay. So we'll just
leave
the
injury. Ask him, though. He won't know.
He will. Charlie Smith, I was out on Sunday night having a few libations, and I can tell you that his game-winning field goal went down very well in the pub I was in Dublin. It's been a great story for him so far, John, and long may it continue.
Absolutely. He's doing himself proud. He really, really is. Like, that's, you know, a game-winning, what was there, like, 4 seconds on the clock or 6 seconds on the clock when he was running up to take that kick. Yeah, tremendous. Like, that's as high pressure, you know, outside of playoffs or games with real implications for silverware and whatnot. That's as high pressure a situation as exists in the NFL. And he passed it, by my view, with absolute flying colors. The kick, what was it? It was 44 or something like that, something in mm-hmm. that ballpark anyway. I don't remember exactly. But it sailed through dead center. Well, maybe slightly to the left, but dead center effectively. And it looked like, as everyone else has kind of agreed to this point so far, it had a lot of legs on it. That would have kept going if it needed an extra 10 yards to cross that goalpost. So I think he's doing tremendously well. And it was nice to see as well, I'm sure one or both of you have seen the footage from the Saints locker room after the fact, where Kellen Moore was handing out the game balls. And it just seemed that the Saints locker room has a great deal of esteem and respect for Charlie Smith. So like he was given the opportunity to do the sort of the breakdown, as in like to give the motivational speech towards the end. And I thought it was quite fitting in a sense that, you know,
and they have subtitles.
Yeah, well, they, you know, it's hard to know, I suppose, what to say in those types of situations. But I think he hit all the right notes by effectively, the first thing he said is he thanked the long snapper and the holder and the field goal protection team. And you could actually see reverberations that around the room of like, they really deeply appreciated the fact that that was the first thing that he said. He didn't talk about himself. He talked about his teammates, and he just went on in that one as well. But it was funny to see as well, to your point, Mike, that Tyler Shuck, the Saints quarterback, was quite prominent in that video. Like, he was one of the people like raising his hand and, you know, patting Charlie on the back when he was giving his little speech. And then I saw a funny cut to Tyler Shuck speaking to the media in the press area afterwards, and the first thing he says is, "Yeah, I had no idea what he was saying at all." Because as most people who've heard Charlie, and God bless him, but he's a fairly thick County Down accent on him at
He
the
does,
moment,
yeah.
and I
It's
think
annoying.
he might have got a couple of cues to perhaps enunciate some words a little bit better or a little bit clearer for the US audience. But no, it's great to see. Super proud of him as an Irishman, and look, he's doing a great job out there, and long may it continue.
It's always feckin' great to kick a touchdown.
I think actually, if you watch wrestling, if you know the character Becky Lynch, which is her, I think her name is Rebecca Quinn, but she changed her accent hugely when she became popular in the WWE, to the point that she's, when you listen to it, she's really enunciating, like almost slowing down her speech patterns to a point so that everyone can understand. That, by the way, that New Orleans Saints Carolina Panthers game, it keeps a wonderful streak going for the Carolina Panthers, who now haven't won or covered a game as a favorite in more than 4 years. September 23rd, 2021 was the last time they managed to actually get the job done when they were expected to get the job
Well,
done.
it also keeps their home and home series with Tampa alive for the division crowd,
Yes,
which is kind
same.
of nice. They're both seven
Yeah.
and seven now, so that's, you know, and at least he didn't, you know, thank God is my hold, begin the speech with like God is my holder, you know, God is my
Yeah.
long snapper.
Oh.
all praise be.
That is how we should start this podcast. Now, we got another email from Jason, of course, and we love the emails coming in, who is our famous Seahawks fan who asked us to look in on them before. And
Jason Smith and
he
Jigba.
rightly said that Thursday night football is a massive game. And to make sure he wanted to know, Mike, how you felt about the Seahawks were doing in general. But we start with that Thursday night football and we go into the Seahawks because it is actually massive. It's the 11-3 Rams versus the 11-3 Seahawks in Seattle. The winner will be in sole possession of first place in the NFC West and the number one seed in the NFC as well. It really is an absolute monster clash taking place on Thursday, which is good to see because sometimes we make fun of it. It is also a pick'em game. The LA Rams are 10-11, the Seattle Seahawks are 10-11. You can get Seattle plus a point and a half at 17-20, and you get 19-20 then. And the Rams minus 1.5 at 44.5 is the over under. For me, Mike, I'm going to come to you and let's open with Seattle. But I guess what I am questioning in this game is, it all rests on can Seattle stop the Rams' offense, which right now nobody seems to do. But a couple of inches. I'm Puka Nacua looked like he was dead shot. And next thing he's up
Man,
for the next drive. So I don't know why that happened there.
I can't believe he survived his trip to the blue medical tent. You know, I was expect by the time he came out, I thought they would change color to like pink, and he was back on the field. I'm saying, how was he not concussed? You know, he couldn't get up. When he got up, he was shaky. He's amazing. And I think you could make a serious case for him rather than Matt Stafford being the MVP of that team. And hence the MVP of the whole NFL if Stafford were to continue in the front runner spot. And I think it's a good point you make. It is pretty much a pick 'em game, although the 1.5 to Seattle, when you think the home team is supposed to have a built-in advantage from home field, means that, you know, I was surprised they were home dogs in this game. But the question is, not so much can their defense stop the Rams, but can the Rams stop their offense, or will they rely on Sam Darnold doing what everybody thinks Sam Darnold is going to do at some point? At some point, you know, or at any point, Sam Darnold makes a mistake, and the entire internet explodes with condemnation of him as a quarterback. You know, Matt Stafford makes a mistake, and it's, you know, just one little slip up on the inevitable path to the MVP. And I think Seattle's D has been much more steady in a sense. The Rams came out last week in the first half; they weren't very good defensively. In the second half, they were much better, and they really need that young defensive front to produce pass rush because their back end is not all that strong. And I mean, Smith and Jigba will probably have a huge game this week because I've been looking and saying, well, he makes mistakes here and there, you know. He's not as completely dominant as some other receivers, including Puka. But they're also, the Rams are going to be all without Davante Adams, who's played a really crucial part, you know, in that resurgence, because he's so dependable on what you might call the secondary routes, although in a lot of cases he's the primary target. But the routes they need to just get a first down or to get the short touchdown or something like that, whereas Puka makes the big plays when he has to. So I think the spread is pretty clean. I would probably take Seattle. And I, you know, if you get better odds with the points, take it. If you get better odds straight up, take that, I think. But I think they've been a tough out for the Rams when they play in Seattle. Although I might have that backwards, and they were tougher out for the Rams at home. But, you know, a Rams home game isn't quite like a Seattle home game. And sometimes that makes the opponent concentrate more on what they're doing. But it's certainly the game of the week, and it's certainly going to be a really good one.
Yeah, and just on the Seattle buzz, I guess if you do fancy them, it has to be said that the NFC West winner, they're 9-4 to win the NFC West at the moment. The LA Rams are 4-7. So, like, if they were to win it, you know, that would seem to, that would completely flip flop. They're currently 7-2 to be the NFC conference winner.
Who is Seattle?
Seattle, yeah.
And the Rams are.
The Rams are 15-8 favorites.
15-8 favorites. Okay. Yeah. That's pretty close.
Yeah. Like, could you see Seattle getting all the way to the NFC Championship game this year?
Yeah. Same. I think both these teams are balanced. You know, there's a good balance between offense and defense. They're young. Darnold will be the big question when you ask that question to anybody, you know, following the NFL who's trying to find where it says Sam Darnold's next gen stats to making the final, but who's the competition? Who's as balanced? You would have said at the start of the year, Philadelphia or Detroit, but both of them have sprung leaks, not fatal ones necessarily, but certainly not the way these two teams are playing. And, you know, and San Francisco's only a game behind them, but San Francisco's so battered. I mean, every week it's new injuries, and the injuries are to guys who were already injury replacements. You know, Brandon Ayuk is gone. I think they've expelled him from California.
They're kicking him out. Yeah.
Yeah. And Ricky Pearsall now is hurt, nursing two injuries. And
McCaffrey's banged up as well.
Yeah, and I'm amazed that he's lasted the season. You know,
yeah.
If you made an MVP coach a case on just who's the most valuable to the, you know, which guy, if you took him away from the team, would be really lost, McCaffrey could be that guy, if not Josh Allen. I think Josh Allen may not statistically have the season of a Matt Stafford. You know, he's had a great season, inarguably. But if you took Josh Allen away from the Bills, they'd be in a lot worse shape than the Rams would be without Stafford.
That's interesting, actually, because watching the Bills
Jimmy
Patriots
G.
game, Jimmy G.
I was depending on you to come in with that.
Watching the Bills game, like, it looked Bills Patriots. I was watching with a group of people, and during the first half, when the Patriots were all over them, you know, the common denominator we felt with the Bills was that they were pretty easy to read. They were quite one dimensional. It's like, give it a Cook or a design quarterback run. And outside of that, you're like, what the fuck have they got? And in the second half, that's sort of what they did. They gave it a Cook a lot. They did design quarterback runs. And every now and again, they threw it to one of their tight ends. And yet, they're able to come through and beat the Patriots, who are, you know, quite high up in the Super Bowl betting. Even though it does seem like you should be able to scheme to stop this.
One thing they did do was they had Matt Milano shadowing Drake May. They had him spying Drake May as a defender. And that took away for a good part the Drake May run game, which had been a big part of that first half. The only thing they did was hold like son of a bitches. Their offensive line was holding. Their defensive line was holding. The linebackers were holding. On the last play of the game, they literally bear hugged every receiver who was going out. And it also had the call, the zebra call of the weekend, which was the Marcus Jones non-interception, and ruled a catch for a guy who never even caught the ball. He never had it in his hands. He had it on his chest, you know. And that just blew my mind, because we'd already established last week that Isaiah Likely established that you have to have both hands on the ball, 2 feet on the ground, take 2 steps, and then perform a football move. And the receiver coming back for the ball did none of those things. And, and not only got the interference call, but was rewarded with a catch as well.
Yeah, there was a couple of crazy calls. I've got you on, just to go back to Rams, Seahawks, Johnny B, are you in the Rams or the Seahawks camp?
I think it is kind of a coin toss, really, isn't it? There's not a lot to separate these two teams. The only thing I would say is that perhaps of the two, I think the Rams offense is trending slightly more upwards than the Seattle one would be at this stage of the season. Like, Seattle's metrics overall seem to be quite strong, but maybe perhaps there's a little bit of slipping efficiency there as well. But I think the home field advantage is big, so I think that's something that really makes this pretty much a 50-50 kind of game. It's interesting, all the talk about Sam Darnold. Like, you know, in the first game that these two teams played several weeks ago this season, Darnold threw 4 picks in that one. So, like, obviously, if he repeats that type of performance, it's not going to go terribly, terribly well for Seattle. But I can't really imagine that happening to that extent, at least anyway, in a home field game for them. So, and just on Darnold as well, like, he's remarkably, I mean, those interceptions that I just talked about notwithstanding, he's been remarkably efficient throughout the course of the last two seasons, one with so far with Seattle, and obviously last year with Minnesota. He finished last year 14-3 in the regular season with Minnesota, and what is he, 11-3 this year with a brand new team, brand new offense, and so on and so forth. I just think that's like, If you get that sort of performance out of a star, you know, top of the line, top paid quarterback, you'd be like, yeah, that's exactly what we expect from somebody. But to get it from someone like Sam Darnold, and we still, we've just noted on this podcast, we still kind of put forth these questions about whether or not he can pull it off in big games, or whether he is, you know, a good enough quarterback to lead a team into the playoffs. There are obviously questions about the playoffs, given how Minnesota performed in the playoffs last year under his leadership. But, you know, so far, regular season wise, Over the evidence of the last 2 years, and certainly of the evidence of post New York and post Carolina, Sam Darnold is about as dependable a quarterback as there is in the regular season NFL. And, you know, I don't think there's any real case out there for people to be overly, you know, unenthusiastic about his prospect in these types of games. I think every quarterback can have bad games here and there, but I think Sam Darnold has proven himself now, at least to some degree.
Remember, Minnesota let him go. I mean, you know, they didn't make an effort to re-sign him, and he went to Seattle as a complete free agent, which was a great deal for Seattle.
You know why they let him go? Because something John
actually
touched on.
Because they had
J.J.
McCarthy.
And the word is, he's a dependable regular season quarterback. What happens when it gets a little bit more scary out there? Just on this is... You know, this is just me thinking, looking through the betting. What happens if the Rams host the NFC Championship game and the Chargers host the AFC Championship game?
Los Angeles separates from the rest of the country and drifts out to sea.
That's what I would assume happens.
When they were making that stadium, someone probably said that in a meeting and they all laughed. But technically, that would be very interesting if the Chargers had to play the game at, you know, 1 o'clock,
yeah,
well, and everyone still had to leave.
we still haven't had, you know, a Super Bowl game played in the home stadium of the team of a team in the Super Bowl. So that, you know, that would be another first. But ask yourself this: I'm back to Sam Darnold for a second. Would you go into a pub called Sam Darnold's, or would you go into a pub called JJ McCarthy's?
Well, I think
Probably,
with
honestly,
Sam
JJ
Darnold.
McCarthy's because we're in Ireland.
Sam Darnold is a good name for a pub.
But I know, yeah, I'd go into
Let's
it. You,
go to Sam's for a beer.
I can probably walk about 10 minutes in any direction and find a pub called McCarthy's eventually. So.
We got a Saturday night games that we'll touch on, if that's okay with you guys. Philadelphia Eagles against the Washington Commanders. I think this is kind of the start of the NFL's Christmas primetime week, and they chose these games quite a while ago. Obviously, we have Kansas playing on Christmas Day, I believe. So these were all picked to be kind of
Oh,
like,
yeah.
dramatic day games.
Can't
It
wait to
hasn't
watch
really
Patrick
felt.
Mahomes on Christmas Day, everybody.
That was kind of the
That's
thinking,
it.
and I think this was the
Jaden
thinking with this as
Daniels on
well.
Christmas Eve.
Philadelphia Eagles are 1-3. Washington Commanders are 9-4. 6.5 is the spread. 44.5 is the over under. John, did you? So the Eagles look like they're probably getting back on track against kind of bad teams. Teams they lost to Chicago. They were expected to win that, and everyone thought they were bad. They then come against the Raiders, who are probably the worst team in football, and they absolutely obliterate them. And now they're playing the Washington Commanders, who are obviously down their star quarterback. And are really not kind of the team that we expected them to be at the moment. So you would assume the 6.5 would be covered. But would it? Will it?
I would assume that. Yeah, it's Mariota out there for Washington, isn't it? So, yeah, I think yeah, the
Not bad.
Commanders. Yeah, what's that, sorry?
Not bad. Mariota's not bad, you know.
Yeah, I
He's
mean,
not
it's
Jaden, not
he's not
Jaden
Jaden
Daniels,
Daniels.
but
He's not your
yeah.
starter, I guess, is the point I was trying to make there. But yeah, I mean, Eagles. You mentioned it there, Kieran. Like, what was it, 31 to love against the Raiders last weekend? I mean, yeah, that's good to get the kind of the juices flowing and clean the pipes a little bit. But I don't know if you can expect that level of resistance from like a proper NFL team. Not to say that this version of the Commanders are a proper NFL team. Really, not to sound harsh, but they do have one of the worst defenses in the NFL. 31st in opponent EPA per play. They're allowing 6.1 yards per play, which is very, very large for this level. They're just really struggling in every facet of the game at the moment. And I suppose with the Eagles, they are, they've had a couple of bad results recently, but you do get the impression that they're starting to click into gear. And obviously, we say that pretty much probably this week of the season every year on this podcast, but this is kind of when you want to start playing well. It's nice to, you have to rack up those wins earlier in the season, obviously, but so you don't have to play well, necessarily speaking. Now you have to play well to get those wins because you have to be, I mean, I think most of us will be a big proponent of the concept of momentum and how and its importance in the postseason. And you have to finish the season strong and you have to start the postseason strong as well. So it looks a little bit like the Eagles might be doing that. But that said, I do expect them to beat Washington this weekend. But given the woes that we've just discussed, Washington and having it, I would hesitate still to sort of pronounce the Eagles as the, a team that can definitively go on with, real Super Bowl intentions. They do. They like. I don't think anybody would be surprised if the Eagles go deep into the postseason just because of the strength that they have generally across the board. But it hasn't been an ideal season for them, I suppose. But I think they'll win this weekend, and I think they will bank it. Hopefully, from their perspective, as a little just one more notch on the chain towards what they're towards a deep postseason run. At least that's all they've been hoping for. And yeah, it'll begin, like I said, this weekend with a I'd say a more than a touchdown win. The spread is 6.5, so I think they'll win by this one by more than a touchdown, to be honest.
Mike,
I wouldn't argue with that, apart from the idea of momentum, which I think is
Could
a
see you
very,
reacting to that.
you know,
You're
like
not a very, he
momentum is
doesn't like
very important.
momentum.
It's very
No,
important in
it
sports.
doesn't. Momentum lasts until it doesn't.
Yeah,
It only
unlock
takes
yourself.
one. It only takes one slip to turn momentum around completely within a game or within and I understand the idea. Everybody gets up. Yeah, we're going well now. We're going well now. All it takes is one stupid wide receiver
I think it's
outside,
easier to I
flanked
think it's
outside of
easier
you
to
to
prepare for a
step
game.
offside and cost you the game, and then have the coaches blame you when you come to the sideline.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to
But
say
let me
that I
not
think
get
it's
into personal stuff.
Yeah, but just on that, I think it's easier to like. I mean, what I've never been in an NFL locker room, so what do I know ultimately? But I would suspect that it's easier to prepare for a game on the back of a win than it is on the back of a
Oh,
disheartening
yeah.
defeat.
It depends on how mad dog your coach is.
Okay,
Most,
Mike,
what was
Eagles.
it? What was the line? I think it was Seth Wickersham, who I sometimes don't have any time for, but he does come up with some good lines. And it was, you know, many head coaches are just glorified gym teachers or pumped up gym teachers, you know, whereas Bill Belichick was like an, you know, a introverted nerd head coach. But yeah, let's go. Where are we going next? Green Bay?
Eagles. Oh yeah.
Oh,
Did
we're
you give
still
an
on
answer for
the, we're still
Eagles?
on. Oh, did I give an answer? I agreed with John. I think they're worth a
Okay. Yeah.
touchdown. I think they're worth a touchdown on this.
Deja vu repeat of 2 weeks ago when Green Bay and Chicago clashed. This time it is in Chicago, 1:21 in the morning. That's Saturday night. So coming in from the pub or whatever, probably beyond 5 to 6. The Packers, the Chicago Bears, 10 to 11. 1.5 is the spread. 46.5 is the over under on this one. Mike, I come to you first. The weird thing about the game a couple of weeks ago was the spread was 5.5 when it was in Green Bay. And for long periods of that game, it looked like Green Bay would cover quite easily. Now, in the end, they did cover, but only just. It was level in the fourth quarter. So Chicago made some kind of adjustments to react to Green Bay. So do you think that they've done enough to maybe this time offer much more of a challenge?
I think so. Partly they're at home and they're home dogs, you know, another home dog by a slim margin, you know, which, but that means that they're. The bookies are taking away. It used to be 3 points. I think nowadays it's down to around two, the automatic kind of home field advantage thing. That may be a fact of the bookies thinking the NFL scripts things better than they do. But I think too, the loss of Micah Parsons is somewhat major for the way that the Packers play defense, which is largely zone based in the back. And control. And Micah gives them a weapon who, and I won't, yes, I will. I'll toot my own horn here because I said, you know, when he went from Dallas used him primarily as a defensive end or edge rusher. And Micah's more talented than that. When he first came in, they started using him all over the. You can use him inside, you can move him around between plays or during, you know, before the snap because he's always going to have to be double teamed no matter where he is. They're going to always have to be aware of him. And that loosened up the rest of the Packers' defense. You know, they got Gary, for example, you know, was having probably the best year of his career because there's so much attention being given to Micah. And his loss, I think, is huge for Green Bay. So I was surprised that the Bears were dogs at all. I thought the Bears would be favorites in this game. And Christian Watson's going to be out for Green Bay. I think the Bear defense can put enough pressure to neutralize the Packers passing game. And I thought last week when they lost, the running game was the best part of the Packers game. And Jacobs probably should have had more carries in that game. But I know John will probably have the weather report. You know, this could be one of those breeze off the Great Lakes kind of winter games. Which puts the 46-5 over under in some kind of jeopardy. And I'm thinking of this as a kind of under game, which seems strange given the two participants, but I it's a must win for the Packers, I think, more than the Bears. But I think the Bears and the points are kind of lean for me, and the under is more of the bet.
Yeah, John, it was pretty cold for Cleveland visit to Chicago. A game that kind of got going early and then had this huge lull period and then kind of finished strongly with lots of scores. But it was quite a long
Well,
period
lots
of
of
time
scores
for
by one team.
That's what I mean. Excuse me. But there was a period where kind of I think it was 14-0 for quite a while. Did you? I know you saw some of the game. Being a Browns fan, do you think the Bears can do a little bit better this time on home soil against Green Bay with those injuries?
Well,
That's really that is a crucial thing. Like Parsons out is big, isn't it?
Parsons out is big. I was kind of before Mike started talking there, I was kind of going to be floating the Packers to get the win here. And obviously, I mean, I'm not alone in that perception, given the fact that they are the away favorites, and you know that is quite unusual. And particularly as Mike said, that he would have expected, or I think many of us would have expected, the Bears to be favorites here at home. Just to sidetrack ever so slightly, I did have a little look at the weather there, Mike. It's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be quite as cold as it was last weekend. We're looking at 0 degrees Celsius, so it'll be around freezing, but nothing, yeah, nothing too bad really. And I don't think the wind is going to be, what's the wind going to be? 10 miles an hour southwest. So again, nothing huge.
Okay,
I think
I take back everything I said.
it's gonna be a chilly one, but like I think nothing out of the ordinary for this time of the year is what I expect in Chicago. The one thing I will caution about Chicago's prospects in this is that they've got a lot of turnovers recently, and you can't rely on those types of things. Like turnover, it's you know. It's not necessarily, no, it can be. Like, I want to phrase this correctly. Like, it's turnovers can often be an opportunistic thing more so than a scheme or a skill type of thing. So, it's nothing that you can overly rely on. And they have been quite fortuitous recently as it relates to that. So, that's just one word of caution in this as it relates to the Bears and their prospects. But I would be nudging towards Chicago on this one, but I'm not super duper confident. And the 46.5, I kind of feel slightly underish. I feel as it over. Do you care? Kieran wants me to go over. It's because it's more fun.
Kieran signaling over.
So, like, I think this one, it's relatively well priced across the board, I think, as well, because I do anticipate it being a very, very close game. So, I don't think whoever ends up winning this one, I don't think it'll be your route. Like, I mean, that's why the 1.5 is there. It's going to be sort of give or take, I would imagine. And I also think the over under is going to be somewhere around the 46.5 as well. So, that is the sound of me very much sitting on the fence. But it's the space I'm going to occupy, unfortunately, for this game. But if gun to my head kind of thing, I would still probably lean towards Chicago to win money line wise.
Okay. A reminder, if you are enjoying this pod, please do like and subscribe. Please, every listener counts for us on this pod. We hope you're enjoying it as much as we do. And in the behind the scenes, I can tell you that whenever we do this pod, we always talk about before we come on, we say, oh, what games will we talk about? Obviously, with the 6 and 9:25 games. But we actually didn't do that before the show started this week, gents. So I will let you decide. I will let you know that the Chargers Cowboys and the Bucks Panthers games are the games that are live on Sky. Now, obviously, most people watch Red Zone, but I can tell you that that is what Sky are saying are the is the most important game of the week. Mike, I'll let you decide what you think is the biggest 6 o'clock game because I kind of
Well,
have a feeling John might go Bills Browns.
the NFL, they do this to get the celebrity quarterbacks on, at the big moments. So this one is obviously designed to be Brady Cook against Tyler Shook.
Okay, obviously, the big ones, big ones,
So
same things, yeah.
that's the Jets in New Orleans is obviously the big game. I think in the early window, the Chargers Dallas is interesting. And I think Dallas's grave gets dug here. The Chargers are getting 2.5 points, and I would take them based on that. If you like the Chargers, you might think about the under 49.5, although Dallas can put up tons of points, even when they're losing. So a little hesitation, but I think if they're losing this game, it'll be because the Chargers are holding them in and holding them down. So that combination to me makes a lot of sense. But Tampa Bay, Carolina, if you had to choose one game, it's not the game I would want to watch, but it's probably the most important one.
Oh, it is the
Or the
most important one of the six, yeah.
yeah, or the most the and is that way the most interesting one. But I think Carolina is a kind of flash in the pan thing, and a lot depends on whether or not you keep Bryce Young in the pocket, make him play the hard way instead of letting him get a lot of scramble yards or a lot of breakdown passing yardage. He's got pretty good receivers to go to on that. And I think, in fact, this is a kind of quarterback-centric game because I think Baker is showing signs of wear and tear on the season. And so he becomes a limitation at quarterback as well. And his receiving core, which is outstanding if everybody's healthy and playing a good game, is not outstanding right now. Mike Dave, Mike Evans had a big game, but he also only caught half the passes that were thrown to him. Goodwin had a sl a more consistent game, but they weren't long passes, and they were, for the most part, weren't important ones. And Agbaji, who I think is still think is really good and is going to have a great career, you know, has been much more quiet. So it's an interesting game, and you can see why Tampa's been losing, and you can see why Carolina surprisingly has won some games they weren't supposed to win. But I, you know, I still can't get away from Tampa, and Carolina's the 3-point home dog. And that's really tempting because, you know, I Tampa's like Philadelphia. You keep thinking, well, they're going to win this game. They're a balanced team. I got to bet them. And then they go out there and they don't play like the Tampa on paper, the same way the Eagles don't play like the Eagles of paper. That's a good name, the Eagles of paper. By like my band's
Eagles.
name.
Getting on for a band now. Just on that, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 8-13. The Panthers are 5-4. 3 points is the spread. John, you could talk about that, or you can also I'll just let you know that the Buffalo Bills are 1-6 to beat your Cleveland Browns. I'll just let you
Yeah,
know.
well, let's leave the Browns out of this.
Okay, you can
We've
stick with
suffered
Bucks
enough.
pants.
The one thing I'll
Bucks
say about the
pants.
Browns, and this is literally the one thing I'll say about the Browns, is that every year, it seems, even despite how poor they can be, they somehow win against a really good team every year. So maybe that'll be this weekend. They already
This
did
is
it.
the Gardner Minshew. This is the Gardner Minshew game plan,
What's that?
right? Well, oh, well, we can't beat anyone who's it no good. So let's beat a team that's good.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. That's kind of how they've been operating. But I suppose, yeah, let's get back to the Bucs and the Panthers type of game. Speaking of quarterbacks, if you remember, I think I remember it was week 7 on this show, and we were talking, and we weren't alone, obviously. And this is probably, I'm almost certain I probably raised this point. But you'll recall that there was talk in the media about Baker Mayfield being a potential MVP candidate, given how well the Bucs started the first 7 weeks. Unfortunately for all of us, and for me, a Baker Mayfield fan who's been my starting quarterback in fantasy all year long, he's been a bottom three quarterback since week 8. So not great, not great there. And like Mike said, he's clearly got some tread on the tires this year. There's a lot of wear and tear. He's not playing as free as he was. And also, to Mike's other point about the receiver core just being so depleted, that's going to have an impact on any quarterback's numbers. So I think it sort of seems like a little bit of a perfect storm of inefficiency in Tampa Bay at the moment. But at the same time, I just think they're a better team than Carolina. And even despite the fact it's a division rivalry game and Carolina will be the home team in this as well, they have just experienced kind of a crushing defeat at the hands, or the right foot, I should say, of Charlie Smith. So, it remains to be seen what sort of frame of mind they'll be coming into this game in. But I just think, despite the fact that the Panthers clearly can win this game and have a lot of better underlying metrics in terms of how efficient some of the aspects of their game is, I just think Tampa Bay, like, if they're going to get any sort of momentum going or any sort of, downhill operation going here, they have to start doing it sooner rather than later, because they have, it's hard to see a team who've been so poor recently still having a realistic chance of winning their division and getting into the playoffs that way as well. So they got to start making these games count, and they're going to start doing it soon. We've also spoken about how the Bucks tend to finish season strongly after a slump in the middle. They got to get that going if they want to get into the postseason. So I'm banking on that happening. But again, this is a tricky game to predict. So I but again I think the Buccaneers can get this done on the road.
A little Tampa Bay eschatology here. Is Todd Bowles' like career dream to be the Mike Tomlin of the South?
There's worse career paths to take.
And a great segue, because the 9:25 game we should relook at. Two more to go. Let's do this one and the Patriots game real quick. Steelers at Lions. Steelers 12-5. The Lions are 3-10. 6.5 is the spread. And actually, the Lions are 4-5 on that. And 51.5 is the over under. I guess when you're looking at this, Steelers performed well at the weekend, won a game that you'd expect to win, although Miami, Mike, I don't know what they're at in the fourth quarter. I really like what in the name of Jesus are they at with some of the stuff that they did. But the Lions kind of stuck with the Rams, maybe a little bit more than I or a lot of people gave them credit to do. It was probably in defeat one of the Lions' better performances of the season.
Yeah, I mean, if Hutchinson if Hutchinson looks the other way while he's running for his touchdown and sees Parkinson chasing him from the right side, he probably goes in for a touchdown, and that might change some extent the complexion of the game. But you know, I thought basically what you got against Detroit was, you can take away, if you take away the running game, they're left with having to work the ball up the field with a lot of short crossing routes, kind of like Kansas City. And you can disrupt those, although the Rams never really, never really did to any great extent. But unless the Lions start to run the game, Dan Campbell, I think, is at a loss as a play caller. They really miss Ben Johnson a lot. And that's shown up throughout the season to take advantage of it. And the second thing is that their defense has not been all that good. That's less of a worry against Pittsburgh than it would be against some other teams, because I think you're right, Miami helped Aaron Rodgers out a lot in that game. So I kind of like Detroit, and I like the fact that Pittsburgh's gone below a touchdown. You know, you can take Detroit, and Pittsburgh's only getting 6.5. And so I think that might be an interesting bet. And this is another one where I think the under might well be in play.
Yep, John, 6.5 is the spread. Lions getting things going. Steelers got it done on Monday night, but again, helped a lot along the way. How do you see this one going?
I think the Lions are going to hammer them, to be honest.
Nice.
I think the AFC North, all of the teams pretty much are severely underperforming, and I count Pittsburgh in that as well. They seem to, they're okay, they can get the job done against kind of lower level teams in this league, and in the AFC North they're actually taking on a lot of lower level teams this season, just as the through the jigs and the reels of how it's worked out. But they're, if you look at the Steelers, they're kind of average in a lot of different metrics. They've a limited ceiling with Aaron Rodgers playing quarterback there as well. He's clearly not vintage Aaron Rodgers. They're quite reliant on their defense, but throughout the season consistently they've struggled against elite teams. Now, whether you can describe this version of the Detroit Lions as elite is certainly something that's open to debate, given the fact that they're 8-6 so far this season. But underneath that, there are kind of some strong suggestions that they're still good enough to be better than mid-tier teams. So they're third overall in DVOA, which is nice. They're fifth overall in net yards per play. So they have some things going for them. And I just think it's more so my prediction on this one being, so I'd be going the Lions -6.5 on this one. My prediction isn't necessarily because the Detroit Lions are super duper elite and, you know, going to be, they're an outstanding version. They're not as good as they were last year, obviously. But I just think the Steelers are not particularly strong either. And I think particularly given that this is a game taking place in Detroit, I just don't think it bodes well for Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Final one, Mike, let's go to you. Patriots head to Baltimore, of course. Pats, Ravens, AFC championship games, like huge rivalry for years and years and years. Gone off the pot a little bit now, but Patriots 5-4, 8-13 about the Ravens. 2.5 is the spread. Quite noticeably, the Patriots are getting 2.5 points, which maybe a few eyebrows raised, maybe even a few eyebrows raised with that pricing of the Patriots 5-4 and the Ravens 8-13, 47.5 is the over under. Like, throughout the season, one thing has stayed the same is that the bookmakers and the odds compilers seem to like the Ravens a lot more than, well, we do, I guess.
Well, I did a lot, and they certainly haven't justified it for most of the season. The thing is that last week they banged up Cincinnati pretty badly, and the running game was actually working, you know, for the first time in weeks. I think Derrick Henry was a realistic threat running, and Lamar Jackson ditto. I think Lamar only threw 10 or 12 passes in that game. And they, what was the final score? 24-0. 24-0. Yeah, to the Ravens. So they're coming off that good game. The Patriots are coming off what's being counted as a bad game against Buffalo. Although they had a really good first half, and it wasn't until, you know, the last drive of the first half, and then the whole of the second half that they really collapsed. So this will be, I think, a real test for them, you know, as to where they belong. Baltimore's not an elite team, but they're a good team, and they're pretty well coached. And their defense is playing like like you would expect a Baltimore defense to play. So I think it takes a little bit of courage to take New England, even with the 2.5 points. If it went up to three, maybe, because it could stay a tight game. But you look at the Patriots defense, they don't really have any make a difference playmakers on it, except maybe, Christian Gonzalez in the secondary, and he's been playing hurt or was, but no one really else. And they don't really have big game breakers in the skill position spots. And funnily enough, for a team that doesn't, they've been getting a lot of big play touchdowns, which against Buffalo was a bad formula. The one touchdown they had in the second half was Trevion Henderson's 60-yard run, whatever it was, 56, which was a one play drive. So their defense was back on the field getting gassed some more. So I would take Baltimore, I think, in this game. More to
And
play,
looking ahead to
more to
that,
play
then,
for. Yeah.
if that was to be the case.
Yeah, and it's a 48.5 on over under, which kind of smacks of under to me. But John probably has a different approach.
But just before I get John, sorry I interrupted you there. If the Patriots lose and the Bills win, they both stay at 11-4. Would you start to think that it's maybe advantage Bills in that race?
Yeah, because I think if the tiebreaker goes down to strength of schedule, the Bills will have the tiebreaker in that. And I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the conference records, which is the next tiebreaker after it's division record, conference record, strength of schedule, I think, after the head-to-head is split. So that's neither here nor there.
Okay. John, what do you see about this one then? You think any value in the Patriots? Anyone coming in to rescue
Yes,
them?
I'd be favoring, even though the Ravens are at home in this one, I'd be favoring the Patriots, particularly getting 2.5 points. I think it's interesting. I think that Baltimore are still getting priced up like they're a Super Bowl contender, and I just don't think they really are. Granted, that's notwithstanding just some magic from Lamar Jackson, which he's proved to be very, very capable of for a consistently long period of time. But I just think overall, it's hard to have too much faith in a team that's 7-7 already in a very, very poorly performing division, as we've just mentioned. So I think, yeah, I just have a lot more confidence in this Patriots team this year. I like some of the design. I like some of the setups from Vrabel. So I like the play calling. They've drawn up some interesting plays, I think, as well. I think they're kind of well placed to exploit some of the inconsistencies that are in this Ravens team at the moment. And for some reason, I just think they're being, like 2.5 on this one. They're being undervalued, surely. I mean, that's a bit of a surprise to me. I think they can be competitive against Baltimore in every aspect of the game. And I just think this, it's more so just this, again, kind of harping on a point I made for a previous game. It's not that I'm super duper confident in the Patriots in this one. It's just I'm less confident in the Ravens' ability just because of how inconsistent they've been week to week this season. And, I think they have, in some of those 7 wins, they've just benefited from playing some soft teams and getting a, just, quote unquote, bounce of the ball, that sort of thing as well. So they're certainly not playing to the reputation. And I think this is set up for the Patriots to bounce back here with a win. And I certainly like them getting 2.5 going into it.
Okay.
One
Let's get the best
more,
bets.
just one more quick mention. San Francisco at Indy on Monday Night Football. This is the injury bowl, as I was saying about San Francisco beforehand. Indy's pretty badly injured too. If they play defense like they did last week against Seattle, Seattle didn't get a touchdown last week. They six field goals against Indianapolis. And it wasn't because of Phillip Rivers. It was because of the Indianapolis defense who was playing lights out. It's one of the best defense team best performances I've seen in years. Everybody was just rallying to the ball, stopping everything in sight. And if they play that way, they're getting 5.5 at home. They're home dogs, even with Phillip Rivers at quarterback. If their defense plays that way, they'll cause a lot of trouble for San Francisco. And the 5.5, I think, makes them a fairly attractive bet here. And certainly, it's a game I'd be watching.
Okay. Christmas meat. What else are you gonna do? Get the fucking Baileys on. Get the game on.
No Baileys. No Baileys,
No
please.
Baileys.
No.
No.
Kieran's a
No.
big
No.
Baileys man at Christmas. He's always talking
No.
about
I
it.
only started
just
last
give
Christmas drinking it, and I thoroughly
it.
enjoyed
Give
it.
me
I
the
drank a whole
just
bottle of
you
it
know.
one night.
I don't want curdled cream in my stomach. I want Creston Jameson. You know, neat.
Yeah,
But
that'll do
anyway,
too. Perfect way to
yeah.
start the day.
Last week's best bets:
Fuck
Kieran
off.
O'Connor
Oh, fuck off.
took the Bengals in 2.5 against Baltimore, which left him only 21.5 off the
Oh, it
24
was a close
nothing
one, Kieran. It was a close one.
defeat. Do you know the thing is, I didn't even do it. I didn't, like, I would normally always do my best bet. I didn't even back it. I was out in the pub and I actually like just thought to myself, what are you on about? That game is
Yeah.
does not what are you
Well,
doing?
yeah, you're not losing any money when you bet it here, that's for sure.
Losing dignity, which is almost worse. It isn't worse, but
And
almost.
I went back to being the Undertaker, because if I hadn't been able to choose Vegas and Philadelphia under 38.5, 38.5, I would have taken I had another under lined up as a replacement. And both of those, oh, that was Philadelphia's was 38 flat, so that was 31 nothing. And I figured the Eagles weren't worth 31 points, but the Ravens were worth 7, so that worked out okay. And John had the over in Cleveland Chicago, which was wrong.
Yeah, it
Cleveland
was.
was
I didn't miss it. I didn't miss
31-3.
it by 20 something though, like Kieran did.
No, you only missed it by 5.5.
Don't
So
lash out,
that's not
John.
too bad.
Don't lash
So
out.
anyway, our season is rolling along like the certainly not the NFC West, but maybe the AFC
I'm
West.
turning into the fucking Raiders, if you ask me.
Yeah, John and I are tied with 9 wins and 6 losses, and Kieran is just behind us with 7 wins and 8 losses. So two
Well, I
behind in the
genuinely
loss.
think that I've lost like five in a row. I'll have to double
Kieran,
check,
yeah,
but like I
Kieran, I
was,
think you have to win out from here on in, don't you, to
I
win
can do
this?
that. I'm
Yeah,
pretty
there's only
handy.
3 weeks.
Yeah,
You're 2 wins down with 3 games to go.
exactly.
I can do it. I can do it
You're
like
relying
that.
on some mistakes from us though as well, so that's
Which is not no, that's not a terrible strategy.
it's fair. A fair point. A fair point. Well made.
Who wants to go first then? It obviously can't be me with 20-point loss.
Well,
You can
Michal's the
go.
only one who won, so it has to be Mike.
Go ahead,
Yeah,
Mike.
okay. Okay, well, yeah, I was looking for a decent under in this one, and John kind of talked me out of Detroit Pittsburgh, with that rah-rah pep talk stuff about the Lions being so great. So, with Gardner Minshew is going to be trying really hard, which makes me kind of not trust the under in Tennessee and Kansas City, and I think there's going to be a big letdown there. And the weather report's not good for Green Bay and Chicago. You know, this is like, it's a death by a thousand cuts here, you know? I'm going to go with the under in the Raiders and Houston, even though it's only 37-5.
Well, the Raiders won't score, so that'll help that. John, what do you got?
I'm gonna do the Lions against the Steelers. What were they, minus 6.5? Was that what it was? Yeah, so that's what I'll do. I already spoke at length in the show as to why I'm picking that, so I won't harbor the point too much. But yeah, Lions.
I'll go over in the Seattle Rams game Thursday night. Get it done
Ooh.
early. Put some pressure on you boys.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, and yeah, now you'll know.
That's
Now
how you
you'll
do it,
know
guys.
how you
Yeah.
do it.
Best bet on a Thursday. Whoosh.
That
And that is it. Thank you so much for listening. Next week is Christmas, so obviously we'll have a chat about what day we actually do the show of. But hopefully we will get one out to you next week at some stage, hopefully for the Christmas games. But do enjoy the lead up to Christmas. Enjoy those games on Sunday, and let's hope for some winning bets. My thanks to John Baff. John, thank you so much for joining me.
You're more than welcome, Kieran.
And Mike, thank you for also being here. I was going to say also joining, but it sounds better
Yeah,
for also
also
being here.
now I'm gonna also ran. I ran all the way here.
Enjoy the weekend. Hopefully, we'll have as good as last week, and maybe Charlie Smith gets another game-winning field goal. We'll find out. Talk to you next week. Bye for now.